And then what's your status legally? Since I guess you were arrested when Reagan came to town, and what's happened to you since then? Have you been bothered by the police?
Oh, consistently. The status legally is that I have three trials coming up. One on the 21st of May, which is the rape, known as the Isla Vista disturbances, in which I'm accused of breaking most of the windows on Isla Vista. For January or February 24th, I guess it is. Then I have another trial on the 31st, and that's for the Reagan demonstration, in which we were accused of initially of disturbing the peace, and then after after the arraignment, or at the arraignment, they tacked on two other charges, inciting to riot and vulgarity against a police officer, which is their trip. You know, I mean, they keep adding and harassing, you know, as much. And then on June 8th, we have the Santa Barbara 19, or now 20 trials, since I've been consolidated in that. So I have a lot of court things going.
They can't put all those together into one trial?
Oh, no. There are separate charges, separate days.
Well, how can you afford court fees for three separate trials?
I can't. There are people who have helped out. We've helped out some people in the past and are helping people out now, and people are helping us out.
Well, who's conducting your defense?
On campus, for the privilege and tenure thing, the people that conducted the defense were Richard Wasserstrom, who's a Panther UCLA lawyer from Los Angeles, and Leon Letwin, who's also in the UCLA Law School with Wasserstrom. And that hearing is completed, the disciplinary hearing. And they still haven't received the transcript. There's some 900 pages of transcript, and only about 480 were done on Tuesday, or I think Tuesday. In the Isla Vista malicious mischief, or whatever the thing is, John Sink is defending me. And for the campus demonstrations, the Santa Barbara 20, it's John Sink and Roden. And then I'm not sure who's going to defend me for the Reagan demonstrations.
What about your suspension by the chancellor? Is that still in effect, or you had your final hearing on that?
Well, I've had the hearing, as I said, on the discipline, but they haven't come up with a decision yet as to what the discipline should be.
So you're still waiting on that.
Right, and we're also anticipating another hearing by the Privilege and Tenure Committee as to the violation of my privileges that I mentioned earlier.
Have you appealed? What's the final appeal? Or at what stage of appeal are you now, then?
Well, we're waiting for the Privilege and Tenure Committee to reply as to a request, which was made a week ago Sunday, for an opening again of a hearing on the violation of my privilege.
Bill, if I can, I'd like to ask you some things about the Academic Senate. Do you think there's a possibility that there'll be some real reforms in the next year or two if the current student pressure is kept up?
Oh, for sure. I don't see any other alternative. I think the Academic Senate is just being pompous at this point, just being incredibly arrogant. You know, I mean, like, they must realize that students are not going to let up on that pressure. I mean, no matter how much repression that they've brought down this year, the same kind of stuff is happening on every campus.
What kind of faculty support do you have? I noticed the Academic Senate meetings I went to, there are a few people, you know, that seem to be pretty vocal, but what percentage would you say?
Oh, really low. This is a very conservative Academic Senate. This Academic Senate is more like dinosaur, like a dinosaur, than any other Academic Senate in the system. But I mean, it's more conservative than UCLA, and UCLA is just, I mean, like a lethargic mass, you know.
Who's being vocal in there right now? I know Richard Harris has come out with a few statements.
Well, there are a number of people that have been, you know, fairly vocal over a long period of time on the left side. The right side is much more vocal, though, and that's, you know, led by Harry Gervetz, who's supposed to be the bastion of liberalism, but, you know, it's just very conservative. And Andron, who's just completely out of phase with reality. I think that faction is much more significant in the Academic Senate here, and, you know, deserves a lot more press. I mean, they're the people that are doing all the things in the Academic Senate. no one else gets a chance. They've got someone to talk to. And they've had it since it was a state college. But most of these people that are powerful on this campus are holdovers from when this was, you know, just a mediocre state college. And that's why, you know, you get this sort of attitude of just a incredible conservatism.
How do you feel about the tenure system in general? Should it be scrapped altogether or revised, or what would you propose?
I think it should be scrapped. I think the tenure system is just a poor excuse for some kind of refuge, you know, security. I mean, people build up a kind of specialization in their field, publish, you know, generally a lot of crap, but volumes of it, and then, you know, hide behind the tenure system. So they never create, they never produce, you know. It's really a bummer system, I think, all the way through.
We're going to take telephone calls, questions, if you can phone them in at 961-2424, and we'll have the questions brought in to us here.
All right. Well, Rashidi's here with us, and he's got a trial going on now, too, so could you wrap about that for a few minutes? What's the story? What are the charges and how the trial's going?
Well, the jury came in this morning, and I was convicted on two counts. The counts were disturbing the peace, obstructing a pig, and a battery on a pig. And I was convicted on the obstructing and resisting and on the battery. And I have to go back for sentencing on May the 20th.
This was during the Reagan coming to Santa Barbara?
Reagan demonstration.
Were you arrested in any of the other, in IV or first time or second time?
Well, in addition to that, while I was in court, you know, right after, I think it was Monday, right after court, the two sheriffs who were testifying against me, well, one sheriff and one Santa Barbara policeman, arrested me again after court on a charge of grand theft, which was a warrant which was put out by the UCLA Police Department on two counts. Now, this is something that is utterly ridiculous. They haven't as yet have not informed me of what I'm supposed to have stolen or when or anything, and I'm supposed to call down to the Los Angeles court and find out what this is all about. In addition to that, and one incident which I really like to tell about is last Tuesday night, I was walking home about 2 o'clock, and I was stopped by two Santa Barbara sheriffs. And when they first stopped me, the one on the passenger side said, Rashidi, what are you doing out this late at night? Don't you know that there are people who'd like to catch you out at night and offer you, you know? And emphatically, you know, and he said it about 2 or 3 times, you know. Then they said, well, can we search you? You know, and I said, well, do I have any choice? You know, so they got out and they searched me. Then one of them started looking around on the ground with a flashlight all around the area. And he came back to me and said, you threw this, he came with a red pill and said, you threw this down. I saw you make a furtive movement and you threw this down. And they said, well, we can arrest you now or you can go down and talk to Sergeant Bergani. And I said, well, you know, I didn't want to be arrested, so, you know, let's go talk to Bergani. So they took me down to their station, their headquarters they have over in Devereaux, and they took me off in this little room, and they said, well, we're not going to arrest you, you know, we just want to talk to you. And they went through this long rap. And in essence, what they said was that, you know, they made this appeal to me, you know, well, you're an intelligent guy, you know, you're a good guy, you're going to be graduating, you're going to be going and getting a job and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, there's no reason for us to be fighting each other, you know, but there's some of these white guys, you know, who are really insane, they're crazy, they just want to cause trouble. You know, we really got to get rid of these people, you know, so why don't you just stay out of it, you know. And this, they rapped with me for about a half hour, 45 minutes.
What was your response to that?
Well, I told them, as I always do, they've made statements like that before, you know, that they're good dudes, you know, and I like them, and we believe in the same things, you know. And Well, you know, naturally I wasn't going to be belligerent, you know, and cuss them out or anything like that, because there was nothing but pigs in the building, and, you know, they had me surrounded. I was in a little room, and there was about 10 of them waiting outside. But, I mean, I told them, you know, what I thought, you know. And then the two pigs who originally picked me up took me back to where they originally picked me up, and they parked, turned out the lights, and they both got out on either side of me, and the one said, oh, well, you know, no more games. You know, we're just serious business from now on. You know, you're an intelligent guy. You know what we mean, you know, that type of thing. And I, you know, took it as a threat. You know, I think that this is what was meant by also previously, you know, in the building, I didn't mention this, that they said, well, Rashidi, what do you think is going to happen? You know, and I said, well, man, I said, I can't say. It all depends if you guys rip someone else off. I said, I think if you kill someone else, that there's going to be a lot of shit, crap, you know. I'm not supposed to say that, you know, in Isla Vista. And they said, well, if you guys keep doing what you're doing, I think that's what's going to happen. And I said, well, you know, we're right, and we're not going to stop because you guys are wrong. You know?
Well, Jim Trotter also ran into trouble with the police department in the last few demonstrations. I wonder if you could tell us about that.
Well, I was charged by the grand jury with 3 counts of felony, arson, battery on a peace officer, and interfering with an executive officer in the line of duty. And I was acquitted on all 3 counts by jury trial in the Superior Court. And tomorrow I have disciplinary hearings with Dean Reynolds and the conduct committee or some such thing about events that took place on February 12th, which was the demonstration in front of the administration building in which several people got clubbed and things, and I've been charged with violations of that, this new student code that you can't do anything. You know, the very elaborate one where I was charged with interfering with the operation of the university or something. That was when the university had closed down the administration building and had the police out there, yet had not declared the building closed. So that's...
That was the day that I went with Dr. Chance.
Yeah, right, February 12th.
I remember when William Kunstler was on campus, he was talking about the jury and the judicial system in general, and he said, you know, in theory it's an equitable system, and the jury system is as good as any if justice is done equally. What are your impressions about the, all 3 of you, about the judicial system as set up?
I'd like to have had you seen Rashid. I mean, like, there. First of all, there were 9 senile old ladies. I mean, that, you know, had never been sexually satisfied in their lives. No way that they could have been. I mean, thin-lipped, you know, and just flat foreheads. And then 3 guys there. One was about maybe in his late 30s, early 40s, and the other 2 were, like, you know, retired guys. I mean, you're supposed to be tried by your peers. You know, and the average age of these people must have been in the late 40s, early 50s. Like, that is not, you know, those are not his peers. Those people don't have the same lifestyle. They don't have the same attitudes towards things. They're more concerned with, you know, preserving their status quo, even though it's ugly and unsatisfying to them. God, it was just ugly. There's no way that those people could find him guilty legitimately. They cannot possibly be a legitimate jury.
You know, what he's saying, you know, like, I defended myself, you know, on this particular charge, on these charges. And the first thing that I did was objected to the constitution of the jury, because first of all, of the people that were there, you know, available for selection, there was not one black person, first of all. There were a couple of young people, but the defense automatically excluded us when you know, like, their policies automatically exclude any student or any black person or any young person, you know, because they feel that they'll be sympathetic. And being that there's, by the jury commissioner's own testimony, only 1% students that are chosen for the entire any entire year, you know, serve on a jury, they're very easy. They get 7. They can eliminate 7 people in a municipal, you know, misdemeanor trial, and 14 in a felony. so that it's impossible for a student to get another student, or almost impossible for a student to get another student on a jury. So that the average age of jurors, by the jury commissioner's own testimony in Billy Hunter's case, is 47 to 68 years old, and for the most part, retired people. And, I mean, in my case, it was just ridiculous, you know. The pigs who testified contradicted each other. I had reputable witnesses. I had Keith Dalton from the news press, who testified on my behalf. I had Catherine Peake, who's lived here 50 years. I had Officer Pacino, who's the sheriff, you know. Although he didn't see the incident, he testified as to what I was doing there, that I was not trying to cause any trouble. And there's just no way, you know, and the prosecutor handed down this fiendish rap about law and order and how these people, it was their duty to prosecute me, their duty to find me guilty, to stop all these demonstrations.
Because it's costing tax dollars.
Yeah, and you know, he
laid
down
his... That's the thing he went into.
And they... 35, that there's no way they could have convicted me. You know, but they did.
Can we ask you, Bill, about the events in Isla Vista and what you think about violence in general, against the difference in violence against people and against property, and what you thought of both the burning of the bank, and the police violence, and the shooting of Kevin Moran?
Yeah, well, I think there is a, you know, distinct difference between violence and sabotage. I'm going to call. I think that the acts of collective sabotage against the bank on the 24th of February and the 25th of February, and then again this last month, were clearly acts against property. They weren't against people. In no case was any person fired upon unless somebody had fired upon them first. In other words, in no case that I know of in Isla Vista were the pigs attacked until after they attacked first. In every case, they committed some brutal act, and then people retaliated. And, you know, I think for all intents and purposes, what happened in Isla Vista is a direct result of an overzealous, ugly police force. I mean, that wants to see, you know, a lot of shit go on in Isla Vista, because that's exactly how, that's exactly, you know, how they're going to bring this thing to a head and completely quash any kind of significant social change. And they're so effective at it, man. Like, they have the armament. You saw what they did last time with Operation Wagon Train. A sneak attack on a group of students, man. As if they were Viet Cong, you know. Like, those are the kinds of sneak attacks that they have in Vietnam. Exactly. You know, and those are the kind of sneak attacks that they, you know, that they impute that the Indians used to have, even though it's clear that the settlers had a lot more attacks on the Indians than the Indians had on the settlers.
Well, now, what about the main difference between the last demonstrations and the ones before, when the bank was burned, that quite a number of students have come out and said they're against violence and were trying to defend the bank, one of them being Kevin Moran?
Yeah, I think that what happened there was that there weren't very many people that I knew that really were hot to have a riot on in this last riot kind of situation. I don't think anybody was, you know, was turned on to see any more kinds of rioting going on in Isla Vista. You know, several of us went down to talk to Jerry Rubin in an attempt to get him to come up here and just be in the park. In that, you know, we felt that it was important that he come, but it was also important that, you know, that we show that there's a sense of community in Isla Vista starting to develop. And that sense of...
Was Rubin actually here that day?
Well, if he is, he was in a good disguise, because I didn't see him at all. And the riot that ensued, you know, after Jerry Rubin was here, was not because, you know, Jerry Rubin didn't come. I think most of the people felt somewhat disappointed that he didn't come. But what happened effectively, it seemed to me, is that the police desperately wanted a riot, you know. And when all of those people were standing on the steps of the bank on Thursday night, it was clear that nobody was going to go up and throw a Molotov cocktail at a bunch of liberals and conservatives standing on the bank trying to protect it. I mean, nobody was going to do that, you know. And it was over, effectively. And yet the police had to come in. They felt compelled to come in. And the next night, the same thing happened, you know, it seemed to me. The fire had been put out, and nobody was going to, I think, run up and throw another Molotov cocktail at those people standing there.
You know, I think in terms of, you know, all this talk about violence, you know, which mainly all the people who talk about it, you know, the academic senate, the chancellor, you know, they all, you know, they always refer back to, you know, that damn bank, you know, or, you know, something of this sort. They try to play down, you know, the fact that Kevin Moran was killed by a pig, you know. They play down the acts of brutality that were committed against the people in the community. They play down the acts of brutality that instigated the whole thing, you know.
You know, nobody talks about this guy getting hit with a police car. Nobody talks about the 9 people that were shot, you know, one of them now dead. And yet, you know, we keep hearing this thing about, you know, people out, you know, out against violence, you know. Well, most of the people that I know that are fairly radical on this campus were against violence that night, too. And to some end, they were trying to build barricades so that the police didn't swoop in and kill people like they finally did. I mean, people were left merciless. They were left right, you know, in the hands of the pigs when they swooped in.
And I personally hold specifically the Academic Senate, the Chancellor, you know, and a number of other people on this campus who, and, you know, in Santa Barbara, who have consistently resisted change. I think they are responsible. You know, I think that the people who are engaged in, you know, the small group who's engaged in, you know, the real daring acts, you know, were reacting out of, from legitimate emotions. I mean, they were frustrated because every time they try to get anything done, they're constantly just, you know, they just spit in their face. You know, the chancellor just said the hell with student voice. You know, the people in Santa Barbara said the hell with you people are out of this control. And how do they expect people to react? These people reacted normally. They were frustrated. And, you know, they taught me in psychology, frustration leads to aggression. And this is something that they knew was going to come about. I think Chiel's responsible, and I think that he ought to be hung for it.
I'll tell you, if the grand jury were composed of Isla Vista residents, I'll tell you who the people that would be indicted would be. It would be Cheadle and Varley and Evans and Reynolds and Webster and Buchanan and all the rest of those people, Mayor Firestone, county supervisors.
Yeah. And I think also those people, you know, the students who didn't, like, you know, for a long
Reagan.
Time. The whole thing that we were trying to say was, like, students, let's get together and let's show them that we're all together and we all want change. People were so apathetic, they wouldn't come out. You know, a lot of them wouldn't come out. 8,000, yes. You know, 8,000 came out for a while. Then, you know, they started drifting off, you know, and then pretty soon was left maybe 500 people still struggling for change. And the rest of people said, the hell with it. You know, I think if they had all come out and got together and shown that they were behind change, like they say they are now, you know, when all these things have happened, a cat has been killed, people have been shot, and things have happened. You know, if they had come out and showed that there was student support and we had exercised student power, real student power, like the BSU's been calling for ever since we started this whole thing with Norm Powell, we always related the things that we were doing to the larger issues of student power. If you check back on the records, and our statements have always been related that students should get together. But they didn't, you know, and now they're all sorry or mad or whatever. But when they could have got off their asses and done something, they didn't, and now they want to come and condemn those people who had guts enough to do something and to defy that illegitimate authority that's oppressing them and oppressing all of us.
We'll be back to this discussion with Jim Trotter, Bill Allen, and Rashidi in a few moments after election coverage from KCSB-FM, Santa Barbara.
Thank you, Dave. This is Bob Diedrich with Phil Singer and Steve Barnett, reporting from KCSB Election Central. Next door to the election office, the AS election office, on the second floor of the UCSB University Center. We have the late results on all offices now, and we'll start right into them from the top. For Associated Students President, we have Bruce Harger with 2 votes, Costello de la Rocha with 364 votes, and Tom Tosdell leading with 685 votes. Those results just brought into KCSB Election Central a few moments ago. For Executive Vice President, Booker Banks, 254 votes, Katy Perry leading with 438 votes, Bruce Harger with 6 votes, and Kim Bish with 249 votes. for Administrative Vice President. Bruce Harger, 24 votes. Paul Gassaway, 557 votes. And Rich Trussell, 336 votes. And now for the latest totals on RHA, non-affiliated sorority representatives and representatives at large, we go to Phil Singer.
Thank you very much, Bob. For the representatives at large, in first place now, moving out to a rather comfortable lead for this stage of the game, Ralph Smith with 376 votes. In second place, about 101 votes behind, John Evgen, 275. In third place, Don Drozd with 227. In third place, we have a tie for third place right now. Rich Thorngate also has 227. Right behind him in fourth place, Clay Nelson with 213. In fifth place, Mondo Nieto with 200 votes. Right behind him with 190, Eric Little with 190. At 177, Phil Gardner in 7th place. In 8th place, Alan Hirschberg with 186. Put Hirschberg in front of Gardner right now with 186. Phil Warden has 129 votes. Candidate Robertson has 114 votes. Then following him with 92 votes is Bruce Harger. So Ralph Smith out to a comfortable lead right now with 376 votes after approximately 20% of the votes have been counted. For non-affiliated representative, Priscilla Contreras still in the lead with 223 votes up to this time. Robert Garcia with 207, closing the gap a little bit there. Joanne Frankfurt with 197 votes. Mike Bruck with 181. Dalton Nezzi with 125, and Bruce Harger with 100 votes. So Priscilla Contreras leading in the non-affiliated rep race. Steve Barnett, what does it look like in the RHA and sorority rep race?
Well, first we have Steve Arnold with 85 votes. Following him is Phil Hesser with 55, and also Ron Coley with 55. And in third place is Wallagor with 50 votes. For sorority representatives, we have Mary Sturtevant with 20 votes, and ahead of her is Mary Vale with 22 votes.
That's right. So with about 20% of the votes tallied right now, Ralph Smith leading the reps at large, Priscilla Contreras leading the non-affiliated reps, Steve Arnold out to a small lead with RHA, and it's pretty close with the sorority reps. Bob?
Yes. Phil, I think we might mention that almost all of these offices, especially the Ledge Council seats, are very closely contested and probably will be until very late in the night. And we're going to stay here until every last vote is counted or until every race is very clearly decided, which will probably be until the early hours of tomorrow morning. So we'd ask you to stay tuned to KCSB for the latest UCSB Associated Students Elections Returns. For KCSB-FM Election Central, this is Bob Diedrich with Phil Singer and Steve Barnett reporting.
We'll be more rational. So therefore, you know, I mean, that's the whole thing that they've been running down on blacks and, you know, Chicanos, that we're irrational, Latin, we're emotional, Latin. Yeah, you know. And
back on the air with Sheedy Bell Allen and Jim Trotter talking about the violence and disturbances in Islevist, and Steve Plevin also, excuse me. I think we got a telephone question.
Yeah, this is for Bill. Where do you stand on issues such as the Goleta Slough and other conservation issues, or do you have time for such concerns in light of your present predicament?
Oh, yeah. I think that there was a statement recently by the Chancellor, and I think it's an outgrowth of what's happened here, and that is that they're not going to touch the slough now. Yeah. And a lot of things have been saved, you know, since we started demonstrating and putting our bodies on the line out here. One of them is Rex Roth, and the other one is a slough. And so some good things have happened. I'm very much, you know, more concerned with ecology than it would appear in the last two or three months. Some people may remember that, like, 3 months ago on a day, we set in at Stern's Wharf on the oil. That was the day before the demonstration started here. I would like to see people really get militant about ecology, and I'm not really mincing any words. I'd really like to see them get it on against the kinds of polluters and exploiters that that corporations are in this country.
You don't think the environment issue is a cop-out, then, like a lot of people do, taking...
No, I just think it has to be put in political perspective, man. It's a political problem right now, because the major exploiters and the major polluters and those people concerned with, you know, increasing that consuming base, which is basically an exploitative kind of trip, are the corporations in this country. And they're so good at it, man. I mean, they're just they've got all the technology that they need to destroy the earth, to turn it into one agribusiness garden kind of environment, you know, and smooth out all the regularity, I mean, all the variability, just like they're cutting off all the cultural variability.
They like to pave the world.
Right on.
Just have the whole world.
And they like to have the whole world culturally middle class, which it means that they're going to consume for creature comforts, and it's just, I mean, that's their scheme of the world, you know.
Well, I'd like to ask Rashidi about that. There's been some talk, I understand, from black leaders in the East, and they're saying that ecology is a cop-out and isn't the real issue, and that should be put secondary in fighting racism first. Would you go along with that?
I think that what most of the black leaders are saying, and what my side down at the Black Panther Party down at UCLA said, today is that, and like, you know, I've been here in Isla Vista, you know, for over a year, you know, and like I've gotten out of the environment, you know, of living, you know, in the ghetto, you know, and that people there are concerned with much more basic personal things, you know, like eating, you know, like working, like pigs constantly, I mean like here, you know, like we have harassment, you know, and it's intolerable, you know, because the people aren't used to it, you know, to that extent. Like in the black communities, at least once a week, a young black person is ripped off by a pig, you know, and you know, it's stamped, you know, justifiable homicide. And these are things that these people are concerned with. The thing about ecology is, I think that they're saying is that a lot of people do use it as a cop-out. A lot of people, like Nixon, you know, got behind it, you know. And Reagan even said that, you know, that bullshit after he came out and said that statement about, we have to find a happy medium between progress and preserving natural resources, you know, and that I think a lot of people are into it, you know, as a cop. You know, it's something that no one can condemn them for, you know, and yet they can still say that they're trying to, you know, to help, you know. But I think there are a lot of serious people. I think Bill says, because I've seen him, you know, put his own body on the line, you know, his own self, his own career, you know, risk going to jail, you know. I think if people are concerned enough to get at the cause of it and point out who's doing it, like, you know, these corporations, and then tie that in, you know, to their exploitation of the ghettos, the exploitation of the students here, the exploitation of the entire world, then they're really on the right track. But if they're only talking about preserving their own environment for their own personal enjoyment, you know, then I say the hell with them.
Well, if I can give you just one specific case, I know in South Carolina they're trying to put a factory in Hilton Head, I think it's called, and the choice there is whether they're going to put in this factory and pollute the bay, or whether the factory will be put in and it will give jobs to a large number of blacks who are in the poorest county in the United States. How do you make a choice like that?
Well, I really couldn't, you know, not being there, not knowing the specific situation that they're confronted with, you know, all black people are not necessarily working for the good of, you know, the entire world or the good of the community or whatever. You know, they're black capitalists who only care about making money. You know, I want to find out if those black people have some interest in that factory being built, you know. But I think that the important thing is that if technology is used correctly, you know, I think, and I think me and Bill at times disagreed on this, and various other, you know, the radicals, the quote white radicals, end quote, you know, that I think that technology can be used to increase, people's lives and to better people's lives, but as long as it's under control of the corporations and not in the hands of the people, that, you know, that we're just going to keep polluting and, you know, none of us are going to have any place to live. I think Trotter, you know, really is off more into that than me. You know, I like
Well, the whole ecology movement, the whole concept of ecology is ultimately a very revolutionary concept. There's no way to deal with the problems without having a revolutionary perspective, because ecology is based in scientific fact that demonstrates that the whole world is one global sphere, and that internationalism is the only possible solution to these problems. You can't have specific national interests or local interests.
You're probably aware of what happened at the Honeywell Corporation's stockholders meeting yesterday, where it was disrupted by a lot of people, young people who held proxies and went in there and tore up the meeting. Do you see this sort of thing happening in the future?
Yeah, I personally know several friends of mine whose parents are very wealthy that are buying stock in corporations designed to end pollution or clean up pollution, or using their stocks in whatever way they can. It's a very minimal type of effort, because trying to vote in non-pollution measures, say in a board meeting, is almost contradictory, because you're going to vote yourself out of your profit. Our pollution is somebody's profit, as a little slogan goes, and it happens to be very true. There's no question about the reason that there is pollution is because it is in the interest of a capitalist class to slough off that duty. They have that social duty because it's not enforceable.
Probably the major issue of last month's Regents meeting was a move by Regent Dutton to have the university's $7 million worth of General Motors stock, the proxies for that being used to fight for some reforms of GM, and this failed. Do you have any comment on that?
Typical.
Very typical. last month's Regents meeting, one of the biggest issues was how the university would vote their stock in the upcoming General Motors stockholders meeting. Now, the university holds $7 million worth of GM stock, and there was a move on to have the stock used to put some pressure on some reforms in General Motors, and this failed.
Where did it fail? At the regential level? Or
the Regents.
They refused to. Well, sure. You know, they're the biggest capitalists in the state.
That's right. That does a lot to tear down the image of the university. The liberal vehicle for reforming society, when in reality it's the University of California that produces all the nuclear warheads that the country uses. It's the University of California that won't vote for reform in the largest producer of air pollution. And it's stripping away all of the facades that the university has been trying to maintain over the past few years while all the disruptions have been going on. They've been trying to say, we're working for social change, we're trying to improve the environment, we're trying to improve people's lives. But when it comes down to the vote, they're not. They're not interested in that. They're interested in their own profits. And this is the kind of issue that we've been talking about now for a long time, and people are going to start seeing it in a real sense when they see how these votes go.
Well, we have environmental problems a lot closer to home, right out in Isla Vista. So I wonder if each of you could give an idea on how you can make Isla Vista a decent place to live. How can they clean up this community?
Yeah, I think we ought to shoot for, on Isla Vista, a program where we do away with cars on Isla Vista completely. I mean, if it's going to be a student ghetto, let's turn it into as utopian a one as possible. To that end, what we might do is have just emergency lanes running down the streets that presently exist, and have those emergency lanes also be bike lanes, and the rest of the street be torn up and turned into organic gardens. And it could happen. Like, people are starting to plant all over Isla Vista in vacant lots, you know. And there seems to be a lot of energy towards functional kinds of things like that on Isla Vista. I mean, you know, the lifestyle that people are starting to evolve is not just a communal one for sex and leeching off of people, you know. It's one in which people can start living real lives in which they, you know, can control some of their own subsistence, hopefully all of it eventually. In addition to that, I think that they ought to put a limit, like that limit being right now, on any more building on Isla Vista. No more buildings should go up there. There's too many people already. And they ought to turn some of those vacant lots that the realty companies own that they can't build on anymore anyway if we put the limits on. We got to build at least one of them into a daycare center to give some of the women on Isla Vista some liberated time. And then I think we ought to think about getting some of those merchants who've been gouging the people for years now to start contributing some money to, say, a breakfast program for some of the kids on Isla Vista and in some of the Goleta ghettos down here, where the kids certainly don't get very good meals. And I think that we ought to start evaluating exactly how much longer we're going to, you know, permit the kind of rent gouging and the kind of of inflated market prices and the kinds of inflated gasoline prices to persist on Isla Vista. So I think that, you know, the best way to get any kind of sense of community out there is to start turning the place into something that people really want to live in, you know, instead of that people just want to be transient in, you know, and that people are willing to put up with because they're getting a, quote, education so that they can fit within the system again.
Got a thought from a listener. He says that the ecology problem exists from a consumption economy supported by advertisement. If advertising were outlawed, would it help the ecology movement?
It certainly couldn't hurt the ecology movement, but the single biggest problem is not necessarily just advertising, but the fact that people, you know, have to live a certain type of lifestyle in this country to survive. I mean, you know, people that live in, especially in Isla Vista kinds of situations, where you're really dependent on grocery stores for your, you know, source of food, and the fact that the energy necessary to supply, say, a TV dinner, you know, go to the icebox, open the icebox, take the TV in, put it in your oven and prepare that. The energy necessary to do that in this country is in fact the real manifestation of imperialism. The United States uses 54% of the world's resources and it's only 5% of the world's population. Those resources are used to accomplish acts just like that, to open your, you know, prepare a TV dinner, to drive your car, to use all these very highly technological processes that require energy that is deprived in the other 95% of the world's population.
Would you go along with Jerry Rubin's idea of having planting in the morning and farming in the morning and playing music in the afternoon and then making love at night?
That's definitely, that's not just Jerry Rubin's idea. Buckminster Fuller advocates, you know, the same thing.
Tribal people all over the world have been doing it for thousands of years and digging it. I mean, it's just a, I've lived in that kind of environment and it's hip.
I'd like to get into a few questions concerning the student elections that are going on right now, at least the votes that are being counted. One question that we asked the candidates last Sunday night, and might be worthwhile asking you, is the fact that a couple of years ago, most radicals on campus and minority groups were condemning AS government as being totally ineffective. And this election, at least, we've seen a lot of minority groups and radical individuals seeking office. Can you explain this, the change?
Well, let's wait and see the result.
Well, I think, you know, that the reason that I know, you know, before last year, you know, we got into it, we pointed out to people that the student government really didn't have any power. The administration really didn't listen to them. You had people like Paul Sweet, you know, in there who were basically were administration boys, and this is the type of people that, you know, were in there. And the reason that I think that we became involved was to forced the administration to deal with the question of whether students had any power or not, whether they were going to listen to students or not. And I think that this year, you know, like they showed that they wouldn't. And I think that most of the people who are running this year, who you know, have labeled on, you know, whatever side you want to label them, you know, are dealing with this question. And the whole thing, the whole reason is to bring it out to the students, you know, that they will not listen to us. You know, and that the present system is ineffective and that there is no power whatsoever in the hands of students. People like Tazdo, you know, and Perry, you know, who talk about getting lawyers, you know, and things like this, you know, that is not going to work, you know, and it's obvious. And I don't see how after the way that the administration has acted, the statements that they've made, if you've been reading the statements they've made in the news press, you know, about the students, you know, how we are distorting issues, you know, why they're the ones that are distorting issues, how the academic center has been coming, they're just completely ignoring. They have just said, to hell with you. You know, people have been really reading what they've been saying, you know, and I think this is the thing, and students are going to have to realize that, because as long as they think that student government, you know, as it presently stands, is going to bring them some results, it's just going to be going down a blind alley. And eventually, it's going to happen, you know, because people's awareness, you know, like the awareness today is much more than it was last year at this time, and it's going to be at a higher level at this time next year. You know, eventually they're going to realize that this present system, you know, is just not one that's designed to give students any voice. You know, the university wasn't built that way, and it wasn't the students, you know, the way the system was set up, students weren't you know, it's a game, you know. They let the students play around here with their little money, which they're now trying to take back, you know. And I personally think that they financed this move to take away, you know, to do away with the student funds, you know, raise, and this propaganda thing they've been running, you know, about where this money's going, you know. But I think if the issues are made clear to the students, they'll keep that. But I think that's the reason people have become involved, you know, because it, the people who were on there before were not even attempting to really articulate truly, you know, the grievances of students or the issues, but they wanted to be, you know, quote, responsible, end quote. And that's another thing that I've, you know, had experience with in the black community, you know, the responsible Negroes, the house niggas, we call them. And you got a lot of house nigger students, you know, one in particular, you know, who I won't mention, you know, on that committee that they put me and Koss on, you know, after Bill's thing, you know, to investigate student input into departments. You know, and we resigned because we knew basically that the committee did not have any power whatsoever. There was one student in there who is now working for the administration who called various other student members and told them, well, you know, you ought to stick on this committee because, you know, like, it'll be really good for you. You know, you'll make a lot of good contacts, you know, and basically they're selling out student interests, you know. You know, they're for their own personal gain and not there to see the students really get a voice. They're there because they've been handpicked by the man, you know, and there are a number of students in these positions, you know, and that's the type of thing we're going to have to see through. That's the kind of thing we're going to have to deal with, you know.
From the early election returns from the USIN where they're counting the ballots from the student elections, it looks as if the more moderate candidates are building up a sizable lead. Do you interpret this as a sign of some sort of student backlash to what's been going on, the radical... Well, I don't know what you want to call it.
The radical office holders that we've had.
And the disturbances in Isla Vista.
Yeah, I don't think there were too many radical office holders. There were, you know, some that sort of posed as radical.
Greg Nell or Costello, if you could call him.
Well, part of the moderate upswing in candidates, I think, is not necessarily due so much to a backlash. The backlash is probably manifested more in the number of people who have voted. You know, more conscientious student body. I've forgotten how many they estimated voted this time, but it's much significant greater number than last time. But the fact that in the last year, student government has been so insignificant, so totally insignificant that only like the fraternity and established traditional organized groups had any kind of power to win those seats. And last year, those people who conceived themselves as radicals and were in groups such as that had an organizational base in which they could, you know, run for office and won. And this year, people have learned that organization is how it's done. And the more moderate elements are more organized now. And it represents their organization, because I don't think the student body has become any more backlashes than it ever was.
Well,
it's still basically progressing.
Will the campus be a swing towards conservatism? Will people try and control El Gaucho and groups such as Asia and the Radical Union?
Any organization that finds itself in a structured power situation like this is inevitably going to try and take control of El Gaucho and whatever media things they can.
I think a lot of it has to do with fear. You know, a lot of students are afraid, you know, of the man coming down. I think KCSB is afraid, you know, that the man is going to come down on them again. I think that what happened to KCSB was just, you know, inexcusable. And the response that came from KCSB in regards to what happened, you know, I remember that
it was lukewarm at best.
Yeah, when they tried to play that album, remember the night of Santa Rita, when they just called and told you not to play that album, you know?
That's amazing. I remember that, man.
What is this, man? You know, and people, you know, still make justifications. You know, they said, well, we don't understand. You guys said, well, we don't understand because we were so responsible, you know, and we were really being good guys, and you cut us off, you know.
You guys were being less than responsible, I think. You know, freedom in this country doesn't mean, you know, freedom from responsibility. I mean, it means exactly that you have to be responsible and find out what's going on. And I don't think this station has done that.
You're supposed to be responsible to
I don't think this station has been objective.
The students, you know, and not to Santa Barbara Sheriff.
Could you imagine what Becca would have done? Could you imagine what Becca would have done if they told her she had to stop publishing the paper? She had told them to get hosed, man.
Well, most students,
she would have published it anyway. She would have gone and published it any place, you know, on toilet paper, you know. And what you guys should have done is gotten another transmitter and transmitted, man. Because
so, you
could have done it.
That whole myth of, you know, objectivity. And what do you mean by objective? To me, it seems like what people usually, you know, when they mean by responsibility of objectivity, they mean using the official reports of the police department.
you know, or the official statement by the mayor, and then they say, well, you know, now we're being objective, you know, and that's bullshit, because the sheriff, you know, has a definite point of view, you know, and obviously, if people ain't hip to it now, it's anti-student, you know, and I think that Becca's position and the position of the El Gacho this year has been pro-student opinion, you know. I think most students do agree that there need to be change. They might not all agree on, you know, the tactics, you know, but they generally agree on the things that should be done. And I think that was reflected, you know, in the newspaper. And she, many times I read in the paper myself that, you know, I felt that they weren't militant enough. You know, I felt that they should have declared, you know, you know, exactly, you know, where they were coming from. They did eventually, you know, but from the get-go, declare exactly where they were coming from and, you know, explain all this, you know, and ran it down, you know. But she asked for people, you know, if you don't agree with me, come on in and write your own article, you know. You know, and people didn't, you know. So, like, basically, you know, they were just jiving. They, I don't know if they're just, if they're still so hung up in the authoritarian trip that they went through with their mothers and fathers or what, you know. That they got to bend to this authority, but you got to recognize that you are a human being, that you have a mind, you know, and that you are legitimate in yourself, you know. No one has to give you legitimacy. You're responsible, you know, you are responsible yourself. You make yourself responsible. You're responsible to whatever you believe in, you know. But, you know, I think that's just, you know, that whole argument, you know, objectivity, you know, it's just, and you know, so-called factual reporting, just like, okay, if someone said, well, you know, the pig shot Kevin Moran, people would say, well, that's an irresponsible statement. You know, it's true. You should have said, well, Moran was killed, and then that's one fact, okay, we know he was killed. Okay, another fact, at approximately such a time, a policeman said that his rifle accidentally fired, you know, and the sheriff even admits that, you know. You see what I mean? You know what I mean? And then you might say, well, the sheriff reported that there were snipers, and we all know that there was no snipers. See, I mean, you can just completely distort what went down, you know. See what I mean? But, you know, I think that's just, you know, totally bullshit. I think what these people mean by objectivity is they want a pro-establishment, pro-police, pro-authoritarian trip going down to El Gacho, you know. And I think that's, you know, I just keep remembering, you know, a statement that the guy, the day we had one of the rallies, you know, a guy from Berkeley, he said he was trying to figure out when does fascism begin, you know, when can you actually say that there's fascism? And he said that he figured out that it's when the people succumb to the authoritarianship, they succumb to the oppression. When KCSB says, okay, the sheriffs are wrong, they're denying our constitutional rights, but we'll go out there anyway, you know, and that's when fascism is in. And, you know, when people say, well, they're pissed off at us, you know, and even though we're right, well, we'll be responsible, what they consider responsible, and we're right, what they agree with, you know. If the Santa Barbara News Press is responsible, you know, and you know where they're coming from, they're considered responsible, you know, and you know what they are.
They're supposed to be one of the best papers on the coast.
Yeah, I hope you never become responsible. That's what being responsible means, because they're responsible to the sheriff. They're responsible to the mayor, you know, they're responsible to
the oil interest, man.
Damn right. You know, that's who they're responsible to.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. We'd like to thank our guests tonight, Steve Plevin, Jim Trotter, Bill Allen, and Rashidi. Following this program will be the news. Our guest next week on this program should be the president-elect of the Associated Students and the administrative and executive vice president-elect. This is KCSB-FM from the University of California at Santa Barbara.
The opinions expressed reflect those of the speaker and not necessarily those of KCSB, the Associated Students, or the Regents of the University of California. Responsible representatives of opposing viewpoints are offered reasonable opportunity to respond. Address requests to the General Manager, KCSB, University of California, Santa Barbara. La 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 la. Moondance is Van Morrison's second album for Warner Brother Records. During this week, KCSB will be giving away 10 copies of that album
as well as 10 Van Morrison posters. Stay tuned for details on how to win.
From the University of California at Santa Barbara, this is the latest news, compiled through the facilities of KCSB-FM.
A force of 6,300 South Vietnamese troops drove into neighboring Cambodia today and destroyed a communist outpost in one of the biggest military operations of the war. U.S. planes and artillery provided cover for the South Vietnamese. The Nixon administration's decision to support South Vietnamese military operations in Cambodia drew strong bipartisan opposition in Congress. Republicans, usually backing the president's Vietnam policy to the limit, have joined Democrats in both houses in introducing legislation to prohibit use of U.S. combat troops in Cambodia. And in Paris, communist diplomatic sources said North Vietnam and the Viet Cong will tell the United States at the Paris talks tomorrow that it will now face a combined front of left-wing Indo-Chinese movements. The White House announced President Nixon will deliver a nationwide address tomorrow night at 9 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time on the Cambodian situation. Israeli troops report that they foiled an Egyptian commando raid in the central sector of the Suez Canal. And Premier Golda Meir says Israeli pilots will shoot down Russian airmen who allegedly are flying interceptor missions over Egypt. Earlier today, Israel said Russians were flying operational missions from Egyptian territory. The Israeli Air Force kept up its attacks on Egyptian positions and guerrilla bases in Lebanon, despite what they called the grave threat of the Russian presence. The State Department says it is proof Russians are flying jets in Egypt. President Nixon ordered intelligence officials to determine if Soviet presence shifts the arms balance in the Middle East. In national news, six students were shot Wednesday night in confrontations with police on the Ohio State University campus at Columbus. The students who were shot were treated at Columbus Hospital, but no details were available. About 300 city police are patrolling the troubled campus, and more than 1,200 National Guardsmen are standing by for use if needed. More than 20 persons were injured and 35 arrested. The federal government has awarded California an $8.04 million grant for innovative programs to reduce crime and violence. Supreme Court nominee Harry Blackmun is apparently a good housekeeper because today he got the stamp of approval from both liberal and conservative senators. The Senate Judiciary Committee was won over so quickly that it concluded confirmation hearing in only 3.5 hours. With no one speaking out against the Minnesota jurist, 9 of the 17 committee members publicly endorsed him, and it is believed